It's time to feel the love.
Baseball Central with Blair and Barker. You're number one, too, Barker. We just had a spirited debate off air. I came in here all excited because I noticed that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is like, depending on where you look for war, whether it's offensive war, war in general, baseball reference, or Fangraphs, the bottom line is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. someplace between 2 and 4 in the different offensive rankings, the different war rankings, which I thought, even though it's early in the year, wins above replacement, well, that tells me he's having a pretty good year. But then Barker says, look at this one list. Look at this one list. Marcus Stroman is on it. He only works once a week. This doesn't matter. So you just basically pissed in the whole show. And we weren't even on the air. Well, Marcus Stroman is on this. He's a pitcher. He only works once a week. So?
I said Tyler Glass not to.
Yeah, he only works once a week.
There you go.
I wasn't saying that this is the way it's going to be. I was just saying it's reflective of the fact that Vladdy Jr.'s had a pretty good start.
They're all great players, Jeff. Yes.
And then your response is, so what are you going to bleep Vladdy Jr. now for the whole show? See, I was just trying to do that. I was just trying to do my job. So, and you like, you came in and you punctured the balloon. I was in a perfectly good frame of mind.
Oh, you were in a good mood.
I was in a damn good mood.
Wow. Really?
And then you come
in. Hold up your right hand.
And then you come in, Barker, and you're like.
Tell the truth. Truth hurts.
Anyhow, Robbie Ray will join us. Tom Caron as well. We'll talk about the Red Sox.
Best team in baseball.
Stop it. They're not even the best team in the American League. Seattle's the best team in the American League, aren't they? As we predicted.
Yeah. Yankees are the worst team in baseball.
I got to ask you this. The first two weeks of the season means nothing. Yeah, we got a lot to talk about. The Jays are going to play the first of two against the Red Sox. Robbie Ray joined us, as I said, Tom Caron.
Yeah.
Pre- and post-game show host
for
the Red Sox. So there you go. So we got a lot to talk about. The Red Sox and Jays, first pitch tonight, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. But we have to go back and talk about the Yankees a little bit. Now, I've been watching the MLB Network a lot, and Joel Sherman is like all over the place.
Sky's falling.
I'm not taking a shot at Joel here, believe me. And
you
his
are?
Column in, no. His column in the New York Post is basically terrific. And he basically asks the question a lot of people are asking.
Is it too early?
No, the question is, well, as Joel points out, first of all,
this
team is 38-37 in its last 65 games. It's not like this slow start to the year. It's not like there weren't signs of this at the end of last season. And the question that's starting to be asked in New York now is, does somebody have to pay?
Like who?
Like the hitting coach? The general manager ain't going anywhere.
Okay.
The manager, we talked about this. If the general manager isn't going anywhere, I don't think the manager should go anywhere.
He's been there for 30 years.
Right.
The GM.
Hasn't won a World Series in how many? A few.
At least 20 of that.
But if you look at the Yankees, I mean, the offensive numbers are scary for the New York Yankees.
They're not good.
And again, more to the point, they're numbers that, or trends that we started to see last year towards the end of the season. And Joel's question is, you are the New York Yankees. You got a bunch of guys playing out of position. You're a mess offensively. He calls it extreme. Yeah. This is his column. Extremely worrisome Yankees mess warrant changes. Now, this is a guy, and Joel, one, carries a lot of weight in that city.
Sure he does.
Two, somebody's telling him this. In the organization, that something's afoot. This is, since the beginning of last season, the Yankees are 38-37. That includes beating the living hell out of the Orioles and Red Sox last year. Mm-hmm. The numbers are just. I don't even know what to make of them. I mean, they're so bad. Their offensive numbers are so bad that I don't believe it.
I think you're starting to see that Gleyber Torres may not be any good. That may be the first and foremost thing, offensively and defensively. You know, if you move him to second, does that make their team any better?
What the hell's happened to Aaron Hicks?
I'm not sure.
Like Aaron Hicks can't be hitting .233.
Yeah, I think the short porch and right really hurts him in Yankee Stadium.
How so?
He tries to use it a lot. You know, when you're trying to pull everything and get, that can put you in bad habits. Like going to Fenway. You know, your right-handed hitter tonight, you're going to see Eduardo Rodriguez, who likes the cutter changeup. You're going to see those right-handed hitters who are young, who really don't know plate discipline and where the plate is. And are you going to see a lot of stepping in the bucket trying to get the head out on the cutter, hit that 310, 37-foot wall at Fenway Park? Probably.
What does this tell you? No team is seeing fewer fastballs than the Yankees this year. No team, no Yankees team has struck out once every four plate appearances the way this team has. No Yankees team in history. It's early. But the Yankees in the past have been known to swing for the fences.
they got 16 homers in 15 games.
They have the highest ground ball percentage in baseball. Mm-hmm. And the home run, they're a great equalizer. They're hitting one homer every 31 at-bats. Compared to every 20 at-bats.
So what do you do? You just quit the season? Say we quit?
No, I'm asking you. You look at this team. What personnel changes are you going to make? Well, you've got maybe Luke Voit comes back at some point. But right now you've got DJ LeMahieu at first base. You've got Rougned Odor. If I told you last year that Rougned Odor was going to be able to win a spot in the Yankees, you would have slapped me in the face. You would have slapped me upside the face.
I'd love to do that.
Well, you'd like to do that anyhow.
Yeah, it makes you scratch your head a little bit. That the
Clint
New York
Frazier,
Yankees,
there's a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of defensive issues there.
Out a lot too.
Yes,
they have issues. You know, again, if this was happening in June, nobody would care. But it's happening right out the gate, and it, like Joel said, it happened last year too. End of the season, you know, there's a bigger sample size here than just the first 15 games.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
I say they're very right-handed. They're very home run or nothing. Manufacturing a run. Like, if you were Aaron Boone and you wanted to put a hit and run on, would you get laughed at from a hitter if he was runner on first and the third base coach was hit and run? Well, what would the hitter do? It's manufacturing, you know, right. not bunting and things. That's ridiculous because they're not going to do that.
No, I know what
you're
saying.
But the hitting and running and the just putting a runner in motion. You know, to put a little pressure on a defense. And oh, by the way, their defense is not real good. You know, Jameson Taillon's not been real good. Corey Kluber's not been any good. You mentioned Aaron Hicks, Gleyber Torres. Look, that having good shortstop up the middle, that's a huge deal. And they're just not doing a whole lot of things really well. I will say this. If their defense gets a little bit better, it will hide other things.
Let me just throw this out there.
It will help.
If you take away the games, they were 16-4 in games against the Red Sox and the Orioles last year. So if you take away that, they are 22-35 as a team since the start of last season.
Hmm.
There are 13 games under .500 if you take away what they did to Baltimore and the Red Sox. They won 9 games.
Well, maybe the league has figured them out. You know, you mentioned it, throwing a bunch of breaking balls. You use the fastball for show. You get them out with the breaking ball. And you a lot of the times, too, you're seeing that you don't have to throw a strike to get them out. That's the one thing. You know, competitive at-bats, and I don't know. What did Aaron Boone yell? We're savages in the box.
Yeah.
Not really.
You're not.
You know, and you're hearing Aaron getting mad and throwing things in the clubhouse. I don't know. How is that going to work? I've said this to you before. The manager can yell at me till he's blue in the face. It's not going to hide the fact I can't hit a breaking ball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you yelled at me. I feel bad. I feel worse about myself because I can't hit a breaking ball.
I can't go out
and that doesn't change the fact I still can't hit a breaking ball.
All right, I'm ready now. I'm going to go out and hit a curve. I'm ready to go out and hit a curve because you yelled at me.
That's the point. You know, me and you argue back and forth about the bunt with the Blue Jays. At least they can do that.
Yep.
They could if they wanted to. Probably not going to. I think they should, but that's the point. Good teams figure out ways when they're struggling to manufacture a run, to put a little bit of pressure on a defense, to get some runners in motion, to do something different, to break it up a little bit.
All right, we've talked enough about the Yankees. I just want to throw that out there because that's what a lot of people in baseball are talking about. So that's one of the big stories today. And you know what? And I'm sure the guys in the telecast tonight.
Yeah, it ain't gonna
Jays and Red Sox. Oh. I mean, there's going to be a lot of there's going to be a lot of talk about the Yankees.
And it gets harder. They got the Braves.
Yeah.
You know, got Ian Anderson, one of those.
Let me give you.
They got Cleveland coming up too. It ain't gonna be getting get a little harder.
Let me give you some numbers here. This is the Boston Red Sox. They lead the AL in batting average at .277. They lead it in on-base percentage at .337. They lead it in slugging at .450. They're second in runs per game. 5.5 runs. 5.5 runs. That's before they threw 11 up on the White Sox on Monday. You know, a lot of people are pointing to J.D. Martinez. Hey, J.D. Martinez is having a pretty good year, and we'll talk to Tom Karen about that. There are 6 Red Sox regulars. They have an OPS plus of 119 or higher. 100 is considered the league average. Yeah. Xander Bogaerts, he hasn't homered yet, but he's got more hits than anybody in the AL.
Yeah, Devers and Martinez have 35 combined RBIs.
What have you been talking about for the past week with me about the Blue Jays? What they lack in the lineup?
Yeah,
producer.
Those two kind of guys. Devers, what's he got? He's plate coverage.
Five homers, 14 ribbies in 15 games.
He can hit velocity, and he can hit a home run line to line.
Mm-hmm.
To be a run producer, you occasionally have to, with 2 strikes, be able to wait on a ball, have a weird-looking swing, and get a hit with a runner on second base the other way. Devers can do that. J.D. Martinez is an ambusher on secondary pitches early in counts. You're seeing that. That's a veteran guy. You know, you let the heater travel a little bit, he's trust enough that he can go out to right center. Mm-hmm. He can get a breaking ball out in front and hit it over the Green Monster. Saying approaches. Approaches for the Blue Jays aren't great. Red Sox right now, look, can they do this an entire season? Probably not. Like, this is what I said.
Can the lineup do it?
Yeah, you would think so.
I think they're going to score a ton. You know, again, all the projections about the Red Sox were really favorable to that team this year because of their offense.
Yeah, and every time I see this guy catch behind the plate and Christian Vasquez, oh, I just look at that and I go, man.
Stick him on the Jays.
How good would he look behind the plate with the Blue Jays?
No, I know.
Who can hit homers, who's a big target, who can throw, who can hit.
And he can hit.
Wishful thinking.
Yeah.
Can't have everything, Jeff.
No. No, I do think I'll have, and I will include myself in this category. I really am. Early days and all that, but I am beginning to think that I slept on the Red Sox too much.
It's early.
I really am.
I don't want to say that word because that word's used a lot. But again, you look at the Seattle Mariners. They are notorious for getting off to really good starts.
Yeah, Seattle's
really good
starts.
Seattle's
smoking mirrors.
They're in first place. They're tied with the best record in baseball with the team we're talking about right now. So, you know, again, it's like the Yankees. The Yankees may have some issues, but are they really going to have the worst record in baseball in the American League at the end of the season? Probably not.
No.
So it's, you know,
they won't have the
you gotta, it's, again, it's this thing's a marathon. Do all of these teams have issues? Of course they do. Does this tell you that pitching is really, really good now?
Either that or
really good. I mean, DJ LeMahieu's gotten off to a little slow start. He looks human. You know, they're flipping it to him early too.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. I'm going to say this. It's hard to take a breaking ball away inside out that to right field. It's hard. When you're an inside out guy, you like Derek Jeter, you want that ball close to you.
Mm-hmm.
They figured that out. Let's go away with it and see if he can hit it over there on a ball away. And we'll spin it. If you can get ahead of him with a spinner and then expand with the spinner and get him to chasing, it's, you know, this is what the league does. Like they figure out ways. Smart people in their khakis are sitting around going, okay, this guy is really good at doing something.
Glasses with tape, being held together by tape and calculators and pencils.
He's really good at this. So what are we going to do to not do that?
Let me ask you this, because J.D. Martinez, I can see you rolling your eyeballs already, but I want to ask you this.
So why are you going to say it?
Because J.D. Martinez made the point that because of the rules on in-game use of technology last year, hitters weren't allowed to, he didn't have access to as much video in-game. And some guys live and die with video.
Yep.
And look, I think a lot of people looked at that and said, all right, well, he's got access this year. and he looks like the J.D. Martinez of a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were a guy who was a hitter.
I tried.
Are you buying that at all?
I am.
Okay.
It's his routine.
Because I thought you were really skeptical. I mentioned that last year, and you kind of gave me the eye. Like,
get over it. You're in the big leagues. Figure it out.
Exactly.
You get all this after the game, before the game.
Exactly.
During the game, suck it up. You know, go figure it out.
But
get it down and get it singing. Doesn't work that way for everybody.
Okay.
And I think it's a little bit of a kickstand for him, too. What I mean by that is he takes a really weird swing, has a really weird at bat. He's thinking walking from that home plate to
explain that to
the
dugout. How does he take a weird at bat?
Like he takes steps in a bucket and his bat's dragging and he overswings on a ball and he's like, well, I haven't done that. Why am I doing that? And then he gets out on a, you know, he maybe pops out to the catcher or something, some weird thing he does. He's late doing something with his hands or, you know.
So what you're saying is he does.
Swing's not level. Now all he's thinking about now is, no big deal. I know exactly what I'm going to do because as soon as I walk and put my bat in the little square thing where the bat goes and I put my helmet in that little square thing, I'm going to walk right over and look on that little iPad and it's going to tell me exactly what I did and I'm not going to do it again.
Does that come from the fact that they're – I admit, I have not watched J.D. Martinez enough. Does he have what you would call a high-maintenance swing? I'm just asking
it. Okay. Overthinking it.
All right. Okay.
A lot of people, you simplify that thing as much as you can. Don't overthink it. The more you think, the worse off it's going to be.
It's like anything else.
It doesn't seem to be that way.
But it's like anything else. If you have a lot of success overthinking stuff, you're going to keep overthinking it because that's how you get paid.
Yeah, you said this to me before, Bo Bichette. What do you say always about him? The more he thinks about it, the worse it's going to get for him.
Catch the ball, throw it.
At shortstop. There you go. Well, most hitters are like that. It has to be super simple. Like, how does it feel when my foot gets down, my front foot in an athletic position? I've done it so much in batting practice that now I don't have to think about it. Now I know if I get it down and it's down on time, I know everything else is just going to fall in place. JD doesn't seem like that's the kind of guy he is. He needs to, okay, I have no idea why I just did that, but that thing over there is going to tell me. I can actually see it already.
Right.
Instead of me looking at the coach, I'm looking at my little iPad. It works for him. You know, you can't pick at it. You can't pick on him because to each his own. Everybody has their little thing.
First pitch tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and Sportsnet is 710. It'll be Hyunjin Ryu on the mound for the Jays and Eduardo Rodriguez for the Boston Red Sox. It was Robbie Ray who was on the mound Sunday for the Blue Jays. He had to work. Let's put it that way. He had to work. He'll join us next. Robbie Ray, this is Baseball Central.
You know, one of the biggest things was I was getting a little too fast with my front side. The turn that I have is tricky sometimes because if I get too fast going down the mound with my front side, I feel like that's when things start to get out of whack. So I think those last two innings felt a lot better. I felt like I was riding out my front side down the mound. Those tough spots, I just bared down and said, let's grind through it.
Well, that was Robbie Ray after Sunday's 2-0 loss to the Kansas City Royals. And, it was a slog right from the start for Robbie Ray. Walks the first batter he faces, Whit Merrifield, stolen base. Carlos Santana singles, wild pitch. Right away you're in leverage. If you're Robbie Ray, because your team's not hitting worth squat.
Nope.
So right away, third batter up is Sal Perez. You got a man on second, a man on first. And the last time this guy swung the bat, he walked it off.
Yeah.
So he strikes out Sal Perez, walks Jorge Soler. Then you get a fly out to right and a ground ball, 5-3 grounder, 26 pitch first inning.
That sounds like smart pitching.
That sounds like
get the big guy out, walk the cleanup hitter, get the next two guys out. That's good pitching right there.
It sounds like really smart pitching and really smart damage control, which Robbie Ray was terrific at on Sunday. And it's the old story. As a starting pitcher, when you don't have your best stuff, when things aren't working out for you, at some point, I think your goal in that game becomes, all right, can I keep it close? Can I give us a chance to win? Can I limit damage.
One pitch away.
One pitch, which Robbie Ray did that, I mean, in spades on Sunday against the Kansas City Royals. I hate to say this because, but as a baseball guy, well, let's bring Robbie Ray on. Robbie, thank you for joining us on Baseball Central, Jeff Blair and Kevin Barker. We were just talking about your Sunday start, and I said, you know, as a baseball guy who isn't on the mound, one of the things that I take particular pleasure in is watching a guy get out of trouble, watching a pitcher get out of trouble. There was a lot of that on Sunday, and one of the things I wanted to ask you, and I know Kevin wants to talk to you about the, you know, your comments about your delivery and all that after the game, but how hard is it for a starting pitcher to have to pitch from the stretch right away and frequently? Like, does that have any impact on your mechanics? So I've often wondered about that. Cito Gaston, when he was here, used to say that he was a big believer in getting, the sooner you can get a guy into the stretch and out of the windup, the better off it's going to be. I'm just wondering if there's any impact on you in that way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like, starting pitchers, most of their work is done in between starts, you know, in the bullpen sessions and everything. You don't really think that much of pitching out of the stretch. You do a lot of your work from the windup, and that's why I feel like throughout my career, I've in those bullpen sessions in between starts, I've thrown a little bit more from the stretch than I normally would, just because most of your big moments in the game come from the stretch. So you just got to feel comfortable out of it for sure.
Okay, Robbie, you talked about mechanically what you were doing. You were a little quick with your midsection going down the mountain and that kind of thing. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think that's a lot what it was up, right? Your arm was trying to play catch up and you had balls going up and away and you were choking off a little bit of the secondary pitches. But I want to ask you, when I was playing and I was hitting, the one thing that kept me out of the big leagues was how quickly I could make my adjustment, right? Something wasn't working and pitch to pitch, I could make that adjustment. Were you able to do that, or did somebody like Petey had to walk over and go, hey, maybe this is what you're doing? Are you capable of making that in-game adjustment quickly?
Yeah. I feel like I'm able to. I mean, I kind of noticed, I spoke about it in the heat of the game, you're just trying to put up zeros, but I had an idea of what I was doing. It's just, you know, when you're competing, you don't, I knew what was working for me at the time. I knew I could throw my slider for strikes. I knew that, if I threw my change up, it would keep him off of my heater. And, I kind of rolled with that. And I spoke with Pete after the game and he was like, yeah, it's the same thing I saw. He's like, but in the heat of the game, I didn't want to tell you anything because you kept putting up zeros.
Yeah. Now when you fail and you had your little accident, when you came back, was there one pitch, a secondary pitch, the slider or the fastball that you were a little timid in throwing, or was it when you came back, you just felt good enough and you could let it eat?
Yeah. I feel like, probably the slider was the one pitch because you're really trying to get that extension. Mm-hmm. And that's something that was kind of limited when I made that fall. My arm was kind of limited with that extension. And it's just getting back to trusting it and trusting that extension out front. And that's one pitch that if you don't get it, it's just, if you don't get that extension with that pitch, you're not going to throw it effectively. So that was probably the last pitch to come for me.
Now, Robbie, you had such a good spring and, you know, it was one of the real talking points at a camp, whenever we talked to anybody, you know, they started talking about the starting pitching. People talk about Ryu and they go, man, Robbie Ray just looks so good. And this may be the Robbie Ray we saw a couple of years ago. How concerned were you? I mean, first of all, I'm glad your child is okay.
Yeah.
That has
Thank
to be
you.
Said.
Most important.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That was the most important. But, okay, when you're coming back, you know, how concerned were you that perhaps all the good stuff you had accomplished might be undone by that time off?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I had built up to 75 plus pitches and I felt as crisp as I've ever felt going into a season. So obviously, you know, having that fall, knowing that I was going to, you know, impact, I was going to take some time off. It definitely concerned me, but I felt like I was able to bounce back pretty quickly. And it was a matter of just, getting back up on the mound and trusting it.
Robbie, I don't want to say you had a bad start. You battled. I think we can both agree on that.
Yeah,
what do you take from that? How can you, you know, keep from starting your next start like that?
Well, you know, I feel like, you know, it's just, it wasn't really hard to get those first couple of guys out, but it was after that, just closing the deal. I feel like a lot of the innings I was getting ahead of guys, but I was letting them get back into counts, you know, go the first, batter of the game. I think I had them 0-2, 1-2 maybe, and then end up walking them. So it's just like in those situations, it's just, instead of maybe trying to go for the put away pitch, it's just get a ground ball or get a lazy fly ball and go on to the next guy instead of letting them get back into the count 2-2, 3-2 and having to group one or end up walking them thinking, you know, he's going to swing at it when he doesn't.
Yeah, you know, the old saying is you don't know what you got until it hits the fan. I know you're a big fan of Alejandro Kirk. How did he help you through your last start?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, he recognized the pitches that I was able to throw for strikes. We leaned on the slider and we threw a lot of changeups, more changeups than I think I've thrown in the past 3-4 years. So, like I said, I was able to use that and keep him off my fastball enough to where I was still able to be effective and get through five. And he recognized that. He's been able to do that through my first two starts. The first one, recognizing that the curveball, we were going to lean heavy on that. So he's done a great job back there.
Hey, Robbie, I'm just wondering, is this clubhouse any different now than it was last year when you joined it? I mean, I know you joined it at the deadline, and you know you were kind of thrown right into it, the sprint of the playoffs, and this is 162 games that we're looking at here. But you notice anything different after a full spring around these dudes and knowing that George Springer's there and Marcus Semien's there?
Yeah, there's definitely last year there was a lot of young guys, and you could tell there was a lot of young guys around the clubhouse. And this year we have some veteran guys and some leaders, and you know, we got some young leaders too, some guys in there that, you know, after last year, they're kind of coming into their own. You know, you're seeing what Vladdy's doing. That guy goes up there every single time, and I think he's going to hit it 600 feet. So, I mean, he's definitely one of the guys in there that's a young leader, and you can see it. And some guys coming into their own, Bo Bichette, a lot of these guys, they're starting to realize who they are as players, and it's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I'm assuming it helps to have a guy like Steven Matz that's similar to you. Any good conversations you and he has had back and forth about just pitching?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we've come close together this short time we've been together, and you know, he has a really good changeup. I've asked him how he throws it, his mindset of you know, what he's thinking. We pick each other's brains as far as pitch selection and attacking guys, as far as you know, scouting reports and stuff like that. So yeah, he's definitely been great. He's pitched really well too. So it's fun to watch.
Now we, because we aren't pitching, we aren't playing. We spend a lot of time kind of looking around and you know, wondering if the New York Yankees are for real, if the LA, well, I think we know the Dodgers are for real. I know you guys have been focused on yourselves and getting ready, but Boston Red Sox look pretty good and look a lot better than I think a lot of people thought, Robbie. I'm just wondering, the players pay any attention to that? You know, the fact that, wow, this team is probably better than a lot of people thought they are, or, you know, this team is worse than a lot of people thought they are?
I don't think so. I mean, I feel like, you know, you understand that it's a 162 game season. It's a long season. It's not the short season, 60 games that we had last year. So there's not going to be, you know, it's not that all out sprint. Mm-hmm. And after 60 games, it doesn't really matter where you're at. It matters where you're at after 162. So I think we're kind of just, we're at the point where we're just, you know, focusing on what we can do every day, come out and win and giving our best effort. And I think we're just kind of letting everything else fall where it is.
Robbie, we really appreciate you joining us today. Thanks so much. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it going. Thank you again.
Good luck.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Robbie Ray. And it was interesting because as Robbie was talking, I went back and pulled some notes out from a Steven Matz interview. Very first interview Steven Matz did as a member of the Toronto Blue Jays was after an early bullpen session. And he was asked about, same question, you got Robbie Ray.
Yeah.
Some similarities. And he made the point that my first bullpen session was alongside Robbie Ray. And I spent a lot of time talking to him about his slider and how he throws a slider. It's a pitch that Steven Matz wanted to work on. Boom. Now I have Robbie Ray saying that he's talked to Steven Matz about Steven Matz's changeup
and
how he throws it. So it's just, it's,
it is, you know, there's a lot of that that goes on in the game, right? There's a lot of feedback from teammates. And look, we spend a lot of time talking about how this team has a lot of left-handed starters. Is it good? Is it bad? Would you like another righty in there, et cetera, et cetera? But I think you do need to reinforce the idea that in Robbie Ray and Steven Matz, they're not the same as Hyunjin Ryu.
No.
Those two of them are completely different. And maybe there is something there that they can learn from each other.
Yeah, well, I always say to you, and I say to a lot of people, I want a guy on the mound who can throw a fastball to a fastball hitter in a fastball count. The two guys you just mentioned can do those things.
Can do that, yeah.
That's a huge deal. It's me against you, mano a mano. That's one of the big things. And I just love the fastball changeup combination. I used to try and hit.
Yeah.
And those two separations between arm speed and velocity, when you got a guy that can throw as hard and is left-handed, there's not a lot of guys that throw, you know, like Ray, that's forcefully just wanting to basically throw it through everything he's throwing it at.
It can
mix in the changeup at the same arm speed. It can be devastating if he could throw strike one. That's what it's all about, throw strike one.
It's funny you say that, because as you were talking, I was thinking about the year that I covered oil can Boyd. And oil can Boyd threw about 37 different pitches. He said one time that I throw pitches that they haven't even made up names for yet. But we were talking about stuff one time and being crafty and all that. And I remember Ken saying, it can get awfully hard trying to outthink everybody.
That's it.
It's awfully hard trying to outthink everybody every now and then. Sometimes you got to be able to throw a fastball in a fastball count by a hitter.
Yeah,
you just have to.
You know what Robbie Ray went to a lot of the times when he was struggling? Oh, numero uno. Yep. I know he liked to say he liked to throw the slider, but me, you saw fastball into some of those righties.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good pitch. You establish in there and it can expand with something that is not as hard and keep the same arm speed. You're onto something. And that way your secondary pitches like your slider, like your breaking ball, doesn't have to be as fine.
Did you notice, and I'm not talking about a specific pitcher here, but when you played, you got a starter in the stretch early. Guys notice that stuff, don't they?
Yeah, well, it helped a lot for me timing-wise. Early on, me timing him up, it's a little harder to see a guy when he's out of the windup. Early on, my first at-bat, I always loved him getting out of the stretch. Yeah, I loved it when I was hitting third or fourth, guy come up, guy stand on first base.
Because you can see the ball when he's set.
See it quicker, yeah. Right. You know, I can time that up a little bit better. It's one move for him. He picks a leg up. That's it. Like, it's not all of that other stuff, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to time it up, and sometimes I would start too soon. I'd start too late. I'd be late. I'd be early. I would miss hit a ball. I wouldn't square it up as much. I wanted that guy out of the stretch. And, you know, it's only makes a lot of sense to work the count and do all these things. No, you want a guy to stand on first. You want him thinking about mm-hmm. something other than throwing mm-hmm. a quality pitch. The more times you can get him doing that, the better off you are.
Yeah, it's just something that Cito always used to talk about, the benefit of getting the guy in the stretch early. You don't often, and it makes sense, and it's completely logical, obviously, if you're a hitter. You know, even now, even though guys don't necessarily have exaggerated windups, the fact that they stop, you at least know where the ball's going to be. At some point before they deliver the ball, you know it's not going to be hiding behind his back or above his ear or behind his head.
It's all the movements. That's what it is. It's hard to time that up because a hitter, you know, they have leg kicks. They have hand movement. I had a little bit of rock back. I wasn't mm-hmm. so much a leg kick guy as I needed a little bit of flow back to go. When do I start that? Well, you know, I don't want to go back and stop it. I want it to be one fluid motion. And just early on, it was easier to do that from a guy out of the stretch.
Well, as we all predicted, the Boston Red Sox are leading the American League East. They're 11-6. They're just hitting the living hell out of the baseball. And they will welcome the Blue Jays to Fenway Park tonight for the first of two games. Tom Caron is the Red Sox pre- and post-game host on NESN. We're going to discuss the AL East leading Red Sox. All this hitting. Do they have enough starting pitching? We'll find out. This is Baseball Central. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Anyhow, 7:10 first pitch from Fenway Park tonight. The Boston Red Sox taking on the Toronto Blue Jays. It should be a pretty good pitching matchup. Hyunjin Ryu against Eduardo Rodriguez. It's going to be good to see Eduardo Rodriguez back on the mound because last year, of course, when COVID-19 hit, one of the
sort of one of the first baseball players to, you know, to come down with it to the point where he was sick, and people talked about having a heart issue as a result of that. It scared the living hell out of me. One of the first guys to have that happen was Eduardo Rodriguez. So, I mean, I'm going to bring Tom Caron on. He is the Red Sox pre and post game host with Nesson. And Tom, first thing I'm going to say is, you know, it's just good to see Eduardo Rodriguez back pitching. And I'm wondering if you or anybody had a chance to talk to him about what that was like. Because as I said, that was kind of the first name baseball guy. And I think that scared a lot of people. You know, young guy, prime of his career, comes down with something and there's a heart issue that may or may not have been connected to it. That got a lot of our attention, I think.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I have talked to him about it. The myocarditis is the heart issue, and it was absolutely connected. It was a byproduct of having COVID-19. Mm. And, it, you know, you're right. As far as last May, last June, none of us knew what long haul was and what kind of ramifications COVID was going to have on the people who had it. And here's a guy in his prime. He's a 27 years old at the time, healthy pitcher. He gets COVID. A lot of guys get COVID at the beginning on intake, right? And you're like, all right, we'll see him in a few weeks. Mm-hmm. He went 3 months where he wasn't allowed to elevate his heart rate at all. Couldn't run, couldn't ride a bike.
Wow.
And his mother was a nurse, which is interesting because, you know, he said she was the one who actually kept him from panicking. She was like, listen, you just do what the doctors say. You're young, you're healthy, you're going to come out of this. But I remember talking to a cardiologist, and he said, you know, I don't know. I mean, you got to see where this goes. Well, here we are a year later. He's going to pitch tonight at Fenway Park with live bodies in the ballpark. Mm. I keep saying Eduardo Rodriguez pitching in a game with people at Fenway is kind of the biggest sign of the recovery that I've seen yet, you know, compared to a year ago when he was laying in a bed while the team was playing in an empty ballpark. You know, he said he appreciates all of this more now. There's no doubt about it because he, for a little while last year, didn't know if he'd ever pitch again.
Tom, I got to ask, did anybody tell the Red Sox they were supposed to be retooling? They got the best record in the American League. You know, they get Alex Cora back. You can think what you want to think about a manager, what they bring, but it's obvious that the players love to play for Alex. Now, you hear Alex talk more than we do on the Zoom calls, and you're probably a lot closer than we are. What do you think he's brought to this team, not only in spring training, but to start the season?
Yeah, you know what he brings? He brings swagger. He brings confidence. Huh. This is a team that had been kicked around and humbled and embarrassed last year. And you know, I mean, you ever get in a fight when you were in grade school, you know, and you're a little third grader and you had a little dust up. You come back the next day and everyone's looking at you. I'm not suggesting I lost those fights, but more often than not, I did. And you go back the next day and everyone's kind of looking at you, right? How's this guy going to carry himself? Well, you know, what Alex Cora does is come into spring training and looks these guys in the eyes and say, listen, you're good. We've got some guys here who can play baseball. He was saying that from the start. I was talking to him every couple of days down at spring training, and he'd be like, listen, we've got a good baseball team. What they did is they brought in guys who might not individually excite you, but a Kike Hernandez, a Marwin Gonzalez, a Hunter Renfro, these guys have been either to World Series championships or to the World Series. Adam Ottavino, a lot of experience. You know, it reminds us here a little bit of 2013. I'm not saying they're going to win the World Series like they did then, but when they brought in Shane Victorino and Johnny Gomes and Ryan Dempster, nobody got excited about those names, but they were veterans and they didn't get overwhelmed by Boston and they didn't care about what the team had done the year before. That's the kind of vibe this team has right now. And Alex Cora jumpstarts it by saying, listen, because he's a brash guy. He's a cocky guy. He is, in a good way. And he gets his players to act that way, to believe in themselves.
Tom, J.D. Martinez's start, please tell me this simply isn't related to the fact that he's happy to have his iPad back.
He loves his video, doesn't he? It's like letting my kids play Fortnite again. You know, it's just they're so happy to be back in front of the video screen. You know, listen, it's more than that. J.D. Martinez is a really good hitter. He came on. We did the second week of spring training. We did an interesting show where they had a workout. They were hitting and taking infield with mics on while Jim Rice and I were talking to them during the workout. And in that workout, it was pretty wild. He went into some real detail in the cage, wearing a microphone, explaining to us what was wrong last year. And he had a foot injury at the end of the 2018 World Series that he said bugged him all the way in the last year. So, you know, not to get too technical on the baseball stuff, but he was swinging early, opening up all of that. He also said, and I found this really interesting, he also said that last year they told him, you're not going to play the outfield. It's a short season. You're not going to play the outfield at all. He doesn't play the outfield a lot, but he might play once a week, twice a week. He said because of that, he wasn't throwing at all. And because he wasn't throwing at all, he thought his right shoulder got really tight. And now that he looks back on it, it affected his swing. So, listen, the guy's a mad scientist when it comes to hitting. It's video. He's got a bag. He throws a frisbee before each game to get loose. He's got a lot of tricks that have worked really well for him. I think he's kind of reinvented some of that this year. So it's not just the video, but the video is part of it.
Okay, Tom, this may be a really unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. It's what we do on Sports Talk Radio. Can Rafael Devers turn into David Ortiz? Meaning that one guy that you want up no matter what, when it matters, that's the guy we want standing at the plate.
You know, it's a fair question, and he could turn into David Ortiz because we're not sure if he can play the field. And yeah, that's the truth. So he might end up being a designated hitter. So it's a pretty good comparison there because he led all of Major League Baseball in errors last year. And he lets that affect him at the plate. When he's going good defensively, he's going good at the plate. And so the DH position, you know, a year and a half from now after J.D. Martinez might be his. But, yeah, this guy, I mean, listen, he's been in the majors for five, this is his fifth season, 5 years, and he's still the youngest guy on the roster. So this guy is just getting into his prime, 24 years old, and what he does is remarkable. The power, the ability, you know, kind of like a Vladdy Guerrero Sr., the ability to go down and get a pitch that's an inch off the dirt and drive it into the opposite field. His hand-eye coordination is unbelievable. Xander Bogaerts is the quiet leader of this team, but Rafael Devers is the jump start, the cable that jumps the battery of this team.
Tom, really good of you to do this, my friend. Thanks so much. Should be a lot of fun.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
It really should be. Yeah, a little two-game series. We're excited about this year because I'll tell you what, we said before the season that I think Toronto is, you know, everyone's talking about the Yankees, but I kept talking about Toronto because if they pitch, and they've been pitching so far, this is a good team. So I think it's a good early season test for both. Should be fun.
Yeah, it will be. Thanks, Tom. Take care.
Thanks, appreciate it.
Tom Caron is the pre- and post-game host on NESN. And again, first pitch tonight, 7:10. I think Tom's right. Look, we always say it's early, and 11-6 isn't, you know, well, 11-6 is 17 games. It's really early. But if you're the Blue Jays and you split this series or take two or three of this series, you got a little bit of a spring in your step, you know, because you're going into Tampa, and you know what Tampa does to the Jays. But, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see how not so much Hyunjin Ryu handles the Red Sox. I'm intrigued to see how this bullpen handles the Red Sox.
I think the bullpen will be great. I think they figured out how to swing and miss a lot of stuff. They pitch a little backwards out of the bullpen. They elevate fastballs.
But you're talking about the Jays bullpen.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. They can spin it first. They can elevate it late for strike three. That's a great question. Ryan Barucci, I really like him in high leverage spots. Again, right. that closing thing, it's yeah, Aroldis Chapman's the only guy that cares about that number.
It's not what it used to be. Go ahead.
Well, I think for me, until the Blue Jays actually get their full lineup back,
yeah,
it's just real hard to sit here and go, this guy needs to do that, this guy needs to
That's
do
fair.
This.
That's fair.
You got a couple of guys in the middle of your order should always be doing it, and then there's everybody else. And right now, there's a lot more everybody else's than there is the guys in the middle of the order. So, you know, Ryu's probably going to do his thing. He's going to use four pitches. He's working on 6 days rest. That's a lot of rest.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand how he can set up routines and you know, the extra bullpen and the extra running. That just seems a lot between starts. But normally, he uses all four pitches right out the gate. That's what it does for him, is that extra day or extra 2 days is I'm emptying the tank. You're seeing all four of them right out the gate. He normally doesn't do that. You know, he tries to pace himself. I'm going to give you this one. I'm going to show you this one. I'm going to get you out with this other one that I just started you off with. But when he's working on 5 days rest or 6 days rest, it is, here's my slow curveball. Here's my changeup. Here's my cutter. Here's my four-seamer up. He is emptying the tank. And Mm-hmm. He's going to have to do that against this team who has tons of confidence. Maybe that is what Cora brings. He brings a little of that mojo. Look, we're here to stay. Well, maybe that's what he is.
Tom made an interesting point in that if you look at this Red Sox team, it does look a lot like that World Series team where they had, I mean, well, a famous story, right? Dan Shaughnessy, terrific writer, looked at the Boston Red Sox in spring training. They had Johnny Gomes and Shane Victorino and Ryan Dempster. It was like the island of misfit toys. Mm. And he pronounced them possibly the worst Red Sox team of all time. In spring training.
Mm.
They went on to win the World Series. And that's not meant as a shot at Dan Shaughnessy by any stretch of the imagination. But there are echoes of that with this team. I just don't know if they have the starting pitching to do that again.
Let me throw this at you. What if the Yankees stink? That just creaked the door open for the Red Sox.
If the Yankees don't right the ship.
How about that?
Possible. The Yankees won nine of the Yankees. We talked about this. The Yankees beat the Red Sox 9 times in 10 games last year.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen this
Mm-mm.
year. No.
Nope.
You think the Yankees right now could score 6 runs?
Not a chance.
Not consistently.
I'll tell you what. I think Dan Schulman said this the other day. I think he's right. I think we're looking at, when we get in the summer, we're looking at a 4-team race in the AL East. I don't think the Red Sox, or I don't think the Orioles will hang in there. I think the other four are going to be in there. I think it's going to be a hell of a summer. If
let's
this keeps
so.
Up, I think it's going to be a hell
let's
of a summer.
Let's hope so.